Blog Talk Radio.
This one goes out to my little homie Brandon. Told you, I got you, my man.
A lot of pressure, man. Let's go, baby. Sophisticated gorillas is on the move tonight. VA, stand up. Come on. Mama. Come on. 100 mountains running. With guns in our hand. Barbarian, heavy metal, carrying rock band. Investing in stock, man. Testing the clock, grand. My peeps got a spot on the block of my block, fam. A jar in the pot, man. Gets you a knot, man. Like ching ching. Hot damn. Cooked it like hot ham. Gotta be smart, man.
You know how we do things, baby.
It's 10:16, Sunday night, live in the house, doing what we do. Welcome. We've had a great week. I appreciate those people who call in and follow up with the show, because the show is continuing to grow, and I just love the fact that people are out there asking questions about sign-up forms. They want to know what's going on, and they're getting the answers that they rightly deserve, because sometimes you don't know if you're coming or you're going, if you're there, or he-she, we-she, or whatever. What we don't like is wishy-washy people. We like people who are real to who they are every day, all day. If you're not, that's just who you are. But, you know, someone said, beware of the chameleon spirit. We don't want people to be chameleons. We want people to be real. Okay? We want people to be real. So if you're not real, then you need to check yourself. So, like I said, thank you for coming to Sign Off Forums on Sunday night. My name is George Beverly, your host. Tonight, we were supposed to have a comedian come on. I was so excited. Something happened, came up, and we're not able to do it tonight, so we got to reschedule like every night. Something happens. But, hey, the show must go on. I'm excited to be here. Tonight is going to be a personal question. Personal, all right? Do you love yourself? Do you care about yourself physically and mentally? How is your capacity right now? Not talking about 20 years ago. We're talking about right now. Do you love yourself? Honestly, do you love yourself? If you do, or if you don't, or if you don't even know, tonight is the night where we explore and we talk about things that we need to talk about. Okay? So, I'm going to get these formalities out of the way. And this is George Beverly Jr. speaking on Sign Off Forums. You can find me on Facebook at george.mango.904. You can also find me on Sign Off Forums on Facebook. You can also get me at Twitter. You can also get me at Twitter at Sign Off Forums 97413. You can call in tonight at 347-989-1014. You can get me at Sign Off Forums 97413@gmail.com. And as we always do, let me back up. I am putting together for Sign Off Forums and for the community of Wichita Falls. I'm trying to put together a fundraiser that consists of BBWs, BBW fashion show, and also a senior citizen fashion show. And I'm looking for models, I'm looking for volunteers, I'm looking for sponsors, I'm looking for donors, I'm looking for hairdressers, and anybody who really wants to be part of a good event for charity, please get in contact with me, either on my Facebook page, or you can get a contact with me by my email. That's soundoffforums97413. Also, you can find me at Facebook, george.mango.904. Okay, it is a blessing to be able to do those type of things, and I am currently going to launch my webpage for Sign Off Forums. There's going to be a load of information. So for those people who say that they're tired of getting so many reminders and all these things, I will be putting out a Facebook page. If you would like to be interested in my Facebook page. I will be putting out a website. It's going to be called soundoffforums.com, soundoffforums.org, soundoffforums.net. No matter how you type it in, you can find me on the internet. And that's going to be soundoffforums with three Fs. So I'm excited. I've been working on this for about a week or two, and I'm just ready to launch it and get everybody's information, output, and all that stuff so we can make this the best we can possibly make it. Whew! There's a lot of stuff going on, and I'm just so excited and blessed that God is enabling me to be able to do that. So, as we always do, Ephesians 6. 6 through 8. through 13, King James Version. Not with eye service as man pleases, but as the service of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good things any man doeth, the same he shall receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of the persons within. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord, and be in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, fallen angels, dark angels, against powers, powerful fallen dark angels, against rulers of darkness of this world, against ruling dark fallen angels of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places, against spiritual wicked demons in high places. Wherefore, take upon the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand the evils of the day, and having all done to stand. And let the church say, amen.
Give a warm, just for it to welcome to Mike Booker.
I haven't even begun to spill my life stories onto these pages. Some people saying they know how hard it must have been, and I'm asking myself how. Because you heard a couple of my poems, we learned the time the gunshots, they happen so much. 7:45, 9:17, 11:23, 1:36 in the morning, nigga, every night, ducking below window sills. My grandmother used to tell me, be grateful for what you got. Some people got it rougher than you, and I couldn't see how when the lights and heat didn't work. Had to walk to the dinner table with a candle and two blankets on just to keep warm. We ate peanut butter sometimes so we won't go to bed hungry. I lived between danger and a stop sign. Learned the streets backwards, I was outside so much. Better yet, learned the streets better than the back of my hand. Better yet, learned the streets better than the back of my father's head, because that's all I ever saw. Once, when I was 15, I went with Chris to go shoot at some niggas over his baby moms, and a gunshot missed my chest by 6 inches. While I listened to the stories that rotated around the neighborhood blocks like squad cars, Lil Jerry, his three brothers, four younger sisters, had to sleep on cardboard boxes in the garage at the end of my alley because his mother did drugs too bad. Miss Adams down the street had six sons. All of them sold drugs. Neither one of them ever saw age 19. The youngest killed a week before his 19th birthday. And you wonder why it's a curse to be stuck here forever? School never meant nothing to me, because everybody from Kinsey to Cicero was on welfare. The property tax was so low, teachers fresh from college would come work at my school for 2 months so they could get a job somewhere in the suburbs. So they could put on their resume, I worked in the inner city like they was in the trenches of war. And you think we didn't know what was happening when we had four different fifth grade teachers analyze my life and tell me how many opportunities I've had to break down stereotypes? The first thing I learned how to count was drug money. My hood is full of kings and queens who evolved into peasants over the time span of 500 years. My ancestry was ripped away from me, replaced with guns and drugs, thugs and crackheads, misdemeanors, felonies, and jail bars. But my grandmother used to tell me, you got a roof over your head, clothes on your back, food in your stomach. Be grateful for what you got. Some people got it rougher than you.
Do it up with Mike Booker, y'all.
Hello, everybody. The reason why I played that, and I know I played a lot recently, but the reason why I played that was because I wanted people to get a kind of a better understanding on where I'm coming from tonight. And the reason why I want to show you where I'm coming from is because the thought of yourself and how you feel about yourself is really important. Because when I say really important, it's a play on your emotions of who you are as a person. And you ask me, George, why is that important? I say it's important because before we talk about other people, we must understand who we are. Who are you? How do people know you? When they talk about you, what do they say about you? What is the first thing that comes out their mouth about you? Now, some people would say that's not important. And I would tell you that isn't important. That's not important to me. I don't really, it doesn't. Listen, what's important is this. What's important is this. The way that you physically or mentally think about yourself, is it a superficial thing or is it deeper? And the reason why that I ask this question is because this is going to be a twofold thing, okay? And people, you can call in anytime you want. Like I said, area code number is 347-989-1014. The next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about self. And then the other half of that is going to be about, it is going to be about relationships. Because that's, I think we get lost as human beings in relationships. Okay? I'll start with myself. I never loved myself until now. I'm 35 years old. I have struggled with the idea or even the notion of what love really is. So for an individual to want to talk about love and how love is supposed to transpire in ideas or even ideology, and the reason why I bring up that word is because sometimes it affects who you are as a person, not realizing that there's more to you than meets the eye, and people play on those emotions to benefit their own agenda. And when I talk about when they benefit their own agenda, I am seriously talking about how they treat you. When I was younger, and we've talked about this in the skin color thing, when I was younger, I was under the impression that my physical appearance, my phenotype was more important than my genotype. And for those who don't know what genotype and phenotype is, just look it up. The genotype is what makes you. That's your DNA. That's what makes you. So whatever you inherited from your parents, your grandparents, your ancestors, wherever tree it falls from, that's who you are. Now, when we start talking about character, when we start talking about the being, we start talking about the words, we start talking about the brain makeup, those are learned skills. And this is just me speaking here. I mean, this is my thoughts. So, when we start talking about those type of things, then we start talking about the spiritual flow or mojo of who you are as a character or you are as a person. And this is because I say this. How you feel about things externally will build how your ideology is based. Now, if you are a Bible-based person or if you are theologian-based person, or if you're just a human being living off the words of man and what you've learned, then those things build your character. They build your ideology. They build your character. They build who you are as a person. Okay? So now we know what the genotype is. Now we're not talking about the we talked about character, spiritual thing. Now we'll talk about the phenotype. Okay. Now in the phenotype, that's where a lot of people get hung up. And it's very important to understand that the phenotype is the most judged thing that destroys us from the outside in. You may be an ugly person on the inside and be a beautiful person on the outside, but nobody would know that unless you opened your mouth. You may be a very homely person on the outside, and you have the most beautiful spirit and heart that anyone has ever seen. You're giving, you're loving, you're caring. But because you do not meet the cookie-cutter appearance of what society says, the chest dies. So that's why we're talking about that tonight. We're talking about, do you love yourself? And I always like to break it down to you and bring you in so you can get an understanding where I'm about to go with this, okay? When I was a kid, I was told that I was a porch monkey, that I was a dirty nigger, that my nose was too big, that my skin was ugly, I could never amount to anything. I could never get a girlfriend. What did I have to offer anyone? And I've lived with those self-esteem issues until my adulthood. Now, there are people right now who's dealing with these issues. Before we know other people, we must know who we are. Before I even knew who I was, I wanted to please other people in order to fit in. So what did I do? I recreated reconstructing a buffer that would help me stop being depressed in front of people and behind closed doors. I was a mess. I was very happy-go-lucky, very funny. I used humor to hide my depression. I used humor to hide my feelings of disappointment. Because if everybody's laughing, then there's nobody actually sitting down thinking about the realities of what's really going on. So if a person called me a nigger, he's like, yep, I'm a nigger, there I go. And I start dancing like I was painted in blackface. Is that the society we still live in today? Because I really want to know. I think children are lost because they have no idea who they are as people. We've got a lot of interracial couples around here, around America, around the world, and they're dealing with the ideal of identity. Let's look at that word identity. Let's look at that word identity. Because when you're talking about identity, I remember I said, I want to be able to be an individual. Now, when you're talking about identity, we're talking about most people would say a facade. Some people would say a facade. I don't know what word you want to use. Put a front. That's the word on the street. A front, right? But this is what identity is. Okay. This is what Merriam-Webster Dictionary says. It says sameness of an essential generic character in different instances that constitutes the objective reality of one thing, oneness. The distinction between characters or personality of an individual, our individuality. The relation established by psychological identification. The condition of being the same with something described or associated. An equal to that of a satisfied for all values of symbols. So we can look at all of these different things and say, you know what? We want to be individuals. We want to identify with ourselves. Okay, so I think that I was doing the first one, which was the first definition. The second, I was doing all of them, one through four. I was just doing them all, because I wanted to create a character that was different from what I really was on the inside. So you have the outside me, but the inside me is dying inside, and so. You would say, well, some people will call that, you know, dual personality. Well, some people will call that. Or schizophrenia. You know, I mean, everybody's a little schizophrenic. Let's be real, people, okay? Because we use these words and we throw them around and stuff. Listen, we got to keep it 100. I'm not the only one with problems. I'm only blessed enough that God has put me in a position to say, you know what? I make mistakes. I'm human. I'm going to put that out for you. And so if I can do that through prayer and supplication and fasting, you can do the same thing too. Maybe just a different way. But you've got to be truthful to yourself. Now, the part B of that says to constitute an objective reality of a thing or oneness. So when I was projecting this reality, the reality was is I wanted people to think that I knew what I was talking about when I was being a comedian, a class clown, and all that stuff, because I wanted to hide the shame. I wanted to hide the feelings. And then part two to that, it says, is distinguishing character or a personality of the individual, individuality. So when we're talking about I want my individuality to shine through. I used that word a lot when I was a kid because I wanted to dress a certain way. I wanted people to look at me a certain way. So if I dressed a certain way, they wouldn't necessarily call me a nigger. I would be a preppy nigger or uppity nigger. So I'd rather be called a preppy uppity nigger than a dirty porch monkey nigger. It's tough reality, but that was the concept when I was younger. Then in that it says the relation established by a psychological identification. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's the psyche that controls the thoughts of whom the character may be. So in essence, I was trying to be somebody that I was not to satisfy or to edify other people to reflect the hurt of who I was. I was short. I was non-athletic. I felt I was ugly. My hair was nappy. And I was poor. So my self-esteem was really low. It was even worse because I began to feel like my life was not valued. That's why suicide comes into play. Now, when you feel that you are unimportant what the definition says, the equivalent to that to be satisfied to all values of the symbols. Now, when we're talking about all of the satisfaction of the symbols, we're talking about the satisfaction of who you are as a person. So if you say that I am George Beverly, my physical being represents who I am. No, I don't have like a Superman S on my chest or anything like that, but the symbol who I am and who I represent to be from my clan or my family or my tribe, which is the Beverly tribe or clan, then I'm reflecting that individuality up onto others. I'm projecting, okay? Now, I may be projecting some lies to you only because that's how I feel inside. So now, if you take that into psyche, which we use, and we smush it down, and we use the Spirit of the Lord to bring out and say, you know what? I am somebody. Because when Gideon was used, he said, I am the smallest of all my clansmen. I am not a warrior. Can you prove to me that you are the God who was of my forefathers? He couldn't believe it. So he did what he needed to do, and God proved himself, and he believed in God because God has given the sign. So Gideon did what he was told to do, and then there it is. But it's that self-reflection saying that I am nobody. I come from nothing. I look like nothing. So, I say this to you. I say, George Beverly, I like big white women. I talk to my peers in high school, and I'll say this publicly, because I'm not using names. I'll say this publicly. There was a situation when I was in junior high, and I went up to this young woman, and I said to you, I like you a lot. Will you be my girlfriend? Now, first of all, as a kid in junior high, it takes a lot of gall and a lot of, you know, kahunas to even say that. She was a very healthy young woman. She was thick, voluptuous. She was Caucasian, blonde hair, blue eyes. And she responded with me with this. She said, oh, my God. My life is completely ruined. My family is getting a divorce, and a black man likes me. Now, as I can remember those words, I don't know exactly remember what I did after that, but I know because I can tell you, I have lived with that. That has been my fuel of wanting to be the perception that I wanted other people to see. That's why I became a womanizer. That is the reason I find out this now that I'm 35 years of age. This is the reason of me wanting to be more than what I am supposed to be. Now, you say, well, that's just an excuse. People, you cannot sit here and let other people tell you how to feel. If you feel that way, it is okay for you to feel that way. Don't apologize, because our society says you must pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You know how many times I had to pull myself up by the bootstraps when I was in Iraq because I lost soldiers? I had to carry on with my life knowing that I was 15 minutes from being dead. Pull up your bootstraps, George. Carry on. Soldier on. Another day will be there. Yes, but I'm still entitled to my feelings. You shouldn't have to apologize for your feelings. That is how you feel. If another person doesn't want to feel the way you feel, then you must let them move on away from you, and you feel how you feel. And when you are ready to be part of society or however, then that's fine. You feel how you want to feel. Now, let's bring that back. Now, I'm feeling that this young woman has said this to me. This is the thing that was profound to me. She said that my family, my mother and my father is getting divorced and a black man likes me. On what level or what plane is on those two things have nothing to do with neither. My parents are getting the divorce. That is her mother and father. And a black man likes me. Not this young boy likes me. Not this person likes me. I'm not ready for a relationship. She said, this black man. So she's saying, because a person's physical phenotype is different than her own, is at the same capacity or the same hurt as her parents getting a divorce. Now, you say to me, George, none of this is making sense. Well, it may not make sense to you, but believe me, there's other situations or scenarios that goes on around the world every day when people are trying to get into a relationship. My wife said something that was very profound to me. She said the other day, I think God gave a revelation on that. She said, honey, do you think when we stopped listening to God and allowed people to be paired to the people that we're supposed to be with, rather than falling in love, do you think that created some type of spin to how we feel as people and in love? That's very profound. And the reason why it's very profound is because are we living off the basis of the emotions of how we feel? And that's why tonight is very important that we have to understand, do we love ourselves physically and mentally? Now, I started in the middle of saying that I love big women. Now, when it comes to physical fitness in our world, if you don't fit a cookie-cutter shape, then you are naturally obese. And obesity is a disease. But back in the ancient times, when a man was obese, it was because he was viewed of wealth and power. Now he's just fat. So you're saying to me that women of power was not thick or big? Okay, first of all, all the pictures you've seen with the Greeks and the Romans and all of them, all of those, these paintings, these sculptures, and all, they are voluptuous women. You don't see nobody that's skinny on there. You need a couple hair hocks, some collard greens. Now we're on the war on obesity. Okay, George, you know why would you want a big woman? Because she's not healthy. Let me tell you this. I want you to go up to a big person and want you to do a survey of how many big people that are healthier than people who are skinny. There are a lot of skinny people who've got high cholesterol. There's a lot of skinny people who've got high blood pressure. There's a lot of skinny people that has several different all kinds of diseases physical ailments that people of heavier weight do not have. So is that discriminative? I don't believe so. You're looking at the person on the physicalness. Men love big women. I don't care what they say. They love big women. And if you can't reflect positive, if you're not attracted to a person of a heavier size, that's your belief. You do not have to spew venom. You don't have to reflect how you feel on the inside, on the outside. That's when we pray for you and say, you need to get yourself together. We love you, brother, but you need to get yourself together. And I know my black people say, George, you are out of control talking about this. The reason why we have high blood pressure and cholesterol problems is, yes, we eat crazily. Because back in the day, we was eating the scraps off the master's table. And so thus created that hereditarial thing in our blood. Now, it doesn't mean that we have to get that way. But when you're poor and you can't get healthy food, you go to Wichita Falls right now. You come to Wichita Falls right now, and you show me a good, healthy spot where you can go get some groceries on the east side. Now, there's Davenport, and they start sell some produce there. It's affordable. But we don't educate our people, nor do we make it affordable for our people to eat healthy. It's more expensive to eat, and some people would debate me on this, but I can go to McDonald's and get a 99-cent hamburger And then you go to Davenport, you're going to pay $4 for lettuce. Or maybe a dollar. But who want to eat lettuce when you can have lettuce, tomato, pickles, and a burger and two buns for 99 cents? One of my listeners says that you can go to BonnieForBasket.org and you can get some fresh produce. It's inexpensive. Thank you. I appreciate that. I got some great listeners. I'm telling you. I got some great listeners. They are on point for the nation. So if you'd like to call in, please call in. The telephone number is 347-989-1014. We have a discussion. Do you love yourself or do you not love yourself? Do you love yourself superficially or do you love yourself internally, regardless of what other people say about you? Now, there was a movie that was produced by Ken Ivan Wayne called I'ma Get You, Sucker. If you have not seen this movie, please Google it or go on YouTube and look it up. It is a very funny black classic movie. I'm gonna get you, sucker. But what I want to get out of this is this thing. There was this scene in the movie where a black woman was sitting at the table and she was dressed in red. We all know the reason of red. And there was this Ken Ivan Wayans was sitting in the booth. So the lady starts licking on her cherry and doing all kinds of crazy things. Yeah, one real. You got change for a dollar? And so she's looking on the cherry and, you know, doing all things. And so Ken Ivan was getting all, woo, getting worked up. So he went back to her place. That's where the beauty stopped. My girl took off her hair. She was wearing a wig. She had two pieces of hair on her head. She took off her leg. She was an amputee. She took off her butt. Her butt came off, and she had a flat back. So what I'm saying is the lady in red was so attractive at the bar, when she got him home, she was not even real. And when I'm saying real, I'm talking about she was faking bacon. She was faking bacon. We've got products today that makes your booty. You can put booty pads on. You can put breast pads on to make your booty. Men can put socks in the underwear. Men can get booty. Listen, men get hair plugs because they don't like the hair. It's the phenotype that we've got to take in and say we love ourselves. It's the phenotype. It's that phenotype. Men say that, one of my listeners said, men say that they want women all natural. Yeah, love weave, fake eyelashes, push-up bras, high heels, men love illusion. And I totally agree with that. It is the illusion for the human race. We don't need to get nose jobs because you got an African nose from Africa. You don't need to bleach your skin because you're dark. That is the perception of society and what society says who you are and what you should be. But if you understand your heritage and you love your heritage, what does that mean? If you are from African descent, you should love to be African. Now, it's easy for me to say that now because after 35 years, I just got that. Okay, I'm going to use that big word again, to be desensitized, desensitization. I was desensitized. A lot of black men are desensitized. Coming up in the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about the relationship between the black man and the black woman. I want callers to call in on this, because the black race, now we say this about, you know, black men marrying white women and destroying the white race. But you ever stop to think that it's destroying the fabric of the black race? Is there going to be any true black women? Are there going to be any true black men from the descendants of Africa? In the next 30 minutes, we'll talk about that. I want people to call in. Like I said, the number is 347 989-1014. Because it's important that we get those dialects out there. Because you hear it all the time, Kanye West had that song, as you say, she'll gold digger, and then at the one of his lyrics he says, she'll end up leaving your butt for a white girl. And we know once you make it big, white women always do. I don't understand the concept of it, but maybe somebody could give me an insight on it. But I can only tell you that I was desensitized, and everything that I saw was white. Now, you could say, oh, well, that's not true, because that you see that. That is just the – I told you my mentality when I was growing up was totally different. I was told that I would never have a girlfriend because I was too dark. I was a porch monkey, I was dirty, and I was poor. So this is not coming from white people, where the porch monkey was, but this was coming from my own internal race, from my family. So my family is telling me that I'm too dark. Now, let me tell you this story. I went to my brothers and I have different fathers. So I went to my brother's grandmother's house, and my brother's grandmother would not let me in. This is back in, like, 1984, 85. She would not let me in the house because I was too black. You said, George, that's not true. Well, I'm telling you right now, that as a living witness, that happened. So I didn't understand it then, but when my brother talked to me in the future, when I was older, I kind of understood what he, and I truly understand it now. So we must love ourselves, okay? So I'm talking about the phenotype right now, because the phenotype is important. Hold on. All right. Uh-oh, we got a caller. Oh, my goodness. You know what that means. Hello, caller. Can you say your name and where you're from?
My name is Tara, and you know I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Hey, what's up, girl? Go ahead. Say what you got to say.
Nothing, not much. You know, I just wanted to call in and support your radio show. I support everything that you're doing, and I know that God's giving you a vision, and I want you to continue, so that's my word of affirmation for you tonight. But you bring up the issue of racism and identity and self-love, not just with race, but I guess with size or with anything. And I know that you can relate to this because, you know, you've met my family. And I hear you say those things about how they treated you as a child and people gave you an identity based on your color. And it really does sadden me when I see that kind of black-on-black hatred, because that's what I'm going to call it. It's hatred. It's a self-hatred. It's like people have bought into this whole concept of, you know, what racism has perpetuated. I grew up in a very strong black family. My parents were very progressive during the civil rights movement. They were not the kind of people who sat idly by. They spoke their minds. They were willing to sacrifice for their families and for the cause. And they really did believe in the vision of Martin Luther King and the vision of Malcolm X. And so that's my background. So when I encounter black people who kind of have this kind of internal dialogue of hatred, it really does hurt me, because it's like I didn't grow up with colorism. I didn't grow up saying, well, you know, you're not light-skinned, so you're not pretty, or you don't have long, silky hair, so you're not acceptable. I didn't grow up with that dialogue. My family, and not just my parents, but the entirety of my family, they were more progressive, and it was more like, you're beautiful. Now, they did take issue with the fat. That's a whole other concept. That's a whole other topic. They bought into that. But when I hear about certain women, when I hear these things being said about light skin versus dark skin, when I hear these things about, you know, things that define people based on their race, I don't think people really understand how ignorant it is and what kind of ignorance it's based in. All these stereotypes. And though some of them may sound like positive stereotypes, they're still stereotypes, just the same as saying all Asian people are smart. And some people may say, well, that's a good attribute to have. But it's still kind of insulting to just say that someone is a certain way just because they look a certain way. That's all I had to say.
Now, how do you feel about the part that I was talking about, how at a point in time, if black men don't stop, not completely stop, but pay more attention or give themselves more to black women than the black race, the purity of the black race will eventually be distinct, be kind of distinct in America.
I mean, there has been a graying of color. You know, there's no longer really a definitive black and a definitive white. I mean, even the Africans come here and they date interracially all day, though it's not acceptable in their culture. Now, this has been my perspective. Now, let me just say this, preface this first. I don't have a problem with interracial couples. You can date whomever you like for whatever reason that you like, no matter how ignorant or what kind of greatness it's based on. That's your business. But that being said, I've always said this. Black women have kind of always held themselves back. They kind of reserved themselves for the black man. Because in our society, in black society, you know, we always hear the black man can't catch a break. We're expected to be the backbone, the support, his biggest fan, his everything, to raise him, to take care of him, to nurture him, to encourage him. Though that's not always reciprocated back to the black woman. We're just expected to be strong, endure. And that's why you see that we stand, we take care of the families, we do everything. We get more education. We take the brunt of the health care crisis, everything. We take care of the family. And then yet I see a man who is raised by that same black woman who had a support system of a great black grandmother, who has a beautiful black sister. And then what he does is he says, that's not good enough for me. I deserve better. And what he has defined as better is something that does not look like his mother, his grandmother, his sister, his aunt. What does that say about what he thinks about his family? And then I say thereafter, look a generation ahead. When your daughter is born into this society, she is a black woman. And what do you tell your daughter? She is not worthy of even a man like me because she is black like me.
Mm.
And so I say, okay, I think the only thing that will truly wake up a black man and really cause him to have an appreciation for black women and what they stand for and what they do, because we're not all bitches and hoes, baby mamas and all this other stuff. I don't know how many countless girlfriends who are professional, educated, beautiful, wonderful people, great character, great families. I say what you do is, if black women as a whole were to just one day say, fuck it, oh, I'm sorry, let's say forget it, we're not dating any more black men, we'd look like the hottest commodity on earth. We would, because part of the way that this whole interracial dating began was the whole forbidden fruit syndrome. You know, in the early days, black women didn't date interracially. We were raped. Our black men couldn't even stand the sight of a white man to put his hands on us in any type of way. He could just have called into remembrance the history, the brutal rapes, the breaking up of the family. And now, that history's all gone. It doesn't exist anymore. That's not in the forefront. They bought into the I'm going to call it the niggerization of black women. Now all we are seeing as, I mean, even finally, like, I watched a show called Scandal. I love Scandal. Don't get me wrong.
Hold on, we got another caller. Hold on real quick, okay?
Okay, gotcha.
You still stand in line. Caller, hello?
Yes, hello.
Okay, can you hold on for a second? Can you say your name, where you from?
Yeah, my name is EJ, I'm from Florida.
Okay, so can you hold on for a second? Tara, go ahead and finish your point.
I forgot what it was. Go ahead, proceed.
Okay, go ahead from Florida.
Oh, so I guess you're just about to get into the whole Scandal TV show or whatnot. But, yeah, I'm just sitting here listening, and I don't know. I don't know if think that that's pretty accurate, but then it's not 100% true.
little louder? I can't hear you.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that's not fully accurate what she was saying, because for one, the first interracial couple in America was a black woman and a white man, and that was the Supreme Court case, Lovin versus Virginia. And then on top of that, you had a lot of Negro bad wenches and black women in the South who actually would give it up during slavery for extra privileges and stuff. So that's not fully true that it was all about rape.
We don't want to talk.
That's what we're talking about. That's the whole point. It's not the fact that black women were giving it up. The fact of the matter of fact is of self-love. And so if they're giving their bodies for receiving services, then they truly love themselves. And what Taylor was saying was, do black men stand up for the black women who are being manipulated, are not being taken in by love by black men?
And I was going to say also with that Loving case, because I've studied that, it was just the first case that was brought before the Supreme Court, well, not even the first, that legalized interracial dating. And the issue was, the funny thing about that was, she was a black woman, he was a white man, and the person who was fighting for the right to date interracially was really the white man. She didn't want to participate in it. She just wanted to move out of state, live a quiet life, and be done. But he insisted that he, as a white man, should be able to marry whomever he wanted. You didn't see any black men up there doing that.
One black man is the white man's government. So they're not going to hang a white man for a marriage, trying to marry a black one. It's going to work vice versa. Matter of fact, free black men who tried to marry white women got sold back into slavery by law. Okay, that's the law of America. So black men didn't have. I don't know why people think that black men making up 6% of America are supposed to take on this entire rich structure that has been built before them, and they're supposed 6% of America is supposed to bring it down somehow.
Well, my point isn't that they should take on the entire infrastructure. My point is stand when the time is available. Always stand on the side of right. You know, I'll put it like this. I will always support my brothers, whether or not my brothers support me. And if you just look at it, it has always been very consistent, even to this very day. Black women stand by black men. We support them. We raise them. We take care of them in a way that you don't see other cultures do for their men.
I have to argue that other cultures actually do better for their men. Because if you look at Asian culture, you look at Arab culture, you look at white, Jewish culture, the first thing they do is make sure that those boys are raised strong enough and with enough resources so that once they grow up, they don't have to go to other cultures for jobs. No Jewish man has to go to a black man for a job. It works vice versa. So I have to argue that other communities ask you to put more resources in love and raising the boys more properly to be those leaders.
And I agree with that, and that starts with us. Just like self-love starts with us, teaching us as black women to love ourselves completely with our kinky hair, our dark skin, our wide hips, and all the things that people in society say are not beautiful.
Have y'all ever seen the movie called Skin?
No.
I've heard of it.
This movie was made during the time of apartheid. In South Africa, there was a family. It was a white family who had children, and all of them looked like black people. And so there was a specific child that was a girl who looked black. And they could not, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but the whole point was is she couldn't even live in her own home because she was considered to be black. So her white family had to go to their parliament and fight for rights to make her white and not black. So all I'm saying is this. I'm not going to say I agree or disagree because that's not what this forum is about. The forum is about, do you feel, what's your name from Florida? I'm sorry.
You can call me Ethan.
Okay. so, do you feel that black men should be more respecting to black women regardless of what or whom they date?
If you mean if black women decide to date out?
No. The question is, if you're at a social event, are you going to go and to a black woman if you think she looks good and say, you know what, you look beautiful. I love your hair. I love the way you're wearing makeup. What I'm saying is, do you show the black women respect even though you're not with a black woman?
Yeah, you should. There's nothing wrong with black women when you're talking about skin and hair and all this other stuff. There's nothing actually wrong with them. The problem lies in some of them who hate themselves. Tend to be ugly on the inside, and that ugliness is what shows on the outside. Physically, there's nothing wrong with black women. You can't say that this woman is that woman, this woman is more beautiful than black women, but she can be so ugly on the inside that she makes herself look more ugly than the rest of the women.
Right, and so my question is what are black men doing to help that self-reflection for the black woman? Because if you said that they're ugly on the inside, they're ugly for a reason. Because they've got to compete with white women who got blonde hair, blue eyes, straight hair. They've got to compete with white women who naturally attract a black man. So what are we doing as black men to attract ourselves or make ourselves available to the black woman? Because right now what Tara is saying is that black men do not make themselves available to black women. Is that correct?
Let me take back a little bit of what you're saying. Essentially, I don't think that black women think of themselves as being in competition with white women. At least I don't. I don't think of myself as being in competition with any woman, period. I'm not trying to look like a white woman. A white woman's not trying to look like me. We don't have competing agendas. We have the same agenda, to be loved for who we are as women. But I say the issue is if what's in your mind that you are programmed to say that a woman with straight hair and fair skin and who looks a certain way is automatically more beautiful than a woman who looks opposite to that, and yet that woman opposite to that is your mother, your sisters, you, then I believe that's an internal sickness that man or that woman needs to deal with. I don't ever look to my white sister and say, God, I'm in competition with her. How can I compete?
You just can't find a different thing out there. You're looking at a black woman. I don't think that's the case when you see brothers jump in the fence and going to other races of women. I don't think they're looking at black women's skin color or hair and going, ugh, and then just move.
I know a lot that do.
I do too.
And then I know a lot that do for other reasons too, because they bought into stereotypes. My whole thing always shifts back to, why is it that you think what you think? You know,
well, I mean, for me, all the other women come from more traditional households. They come from patriarchy. So they're raised in households usually with a man around, not all the time, but usually with a man around, usually with a father figure. They've dealt with male authority before. They're not so scared. Black women are scared of male empowerment. They did a show on BET, and they titled it Black Girls Rock. And what they did was they bought all these black women stars, Taraji P. Henson, Jennifer Hudson, whoever, for the black girls. They didn't realize they didn't even do a Black Boys Rock for their own sons, because to black women, male empowerment is a bad thing. So when you're not empowering those males, and they're not growing up to be the protectors and providers, black women can't be cushy and effeminate as women from other cultures, because those women of other cultures still have those men around. They still see male authority. They still, so basically brothers who want a traditional relationship, when they hop the fence and they go up to these other races of women, it's not going to be a battle in the household over who's this and who's that, because those women are already comfortable with traditional structures where the male is the head.
Right.
and where the men have been raised strong and the men are supposed to go out and earn and provide for the family. Black women usually don't have their father around. So they already have a problem with black male empowerment out the gate because they never can.
Well, black men can begin to empower the next generation by sticking around for their families. If a boy, if a woman is a single-parent household, it's for a reason. It's usually not because she kicked them out because she wants to be the head of the house. I have yet to meet very many women who just said, well, no, he's got to go because I wear the britches. It's because he didn't stand around, he didn't stay around to raise his kids, to raise his son, to be the strong black man that you say needs to be the patriarch of the family.
Let me ask a question to both of you. Do you think that the depiction of these black movies with, you know, like Tyler Perry and all, you know, Spike Lee and all these different producers, do you think that they promote positive reflection of what black relationships look like? Sarah, go ahead.
You know, I don't get into Tyler Perry like that. I don't like Madea movies. I don't like those.
If anything, Tyler Perry is always looking for a black villain. If you look at Why Did I Get Married, Part 1 and 2, you had to take Malayobu, who was actually a good guy in Part 1, and make him just the most evil person on earth in Part 2, right before he killed him off, and then she ended up getting a light-skinned man. as a reward at the end, you know. So that was the last Tyler Perry movie I saw. After that, I boycotted them because I'm like, you just got to have a black male villain. And that's the whole thing. They've convinced black women that they're supposed to be in competition with the men, and they end up with the women and children on this side and the men on this side. Like, we're separate. Every other culture is together as one.
Now, do you think that – now, I know this is who I am, so I'm going to bring it up. So do you think that Hollywood is depicting to other races of how black relationships really are?
Kind of. I think they may be setting the tone from the get-go, and then we live up to the stereotypes that they put out, because you didn't hear women actually start walking around saying they were strong, independent black women, they don't need a man, until they started hearing, you know, Destiny's Child or Beyonce say it and started seeing it on TV and in music. And then they went and adopted that, not really paying attention that there's no such thing as a strong, independent Jewish woman. And they, their community has 20 times more wealth than ours. So it's basically, they basically went in and tricked black women into eroding their own defense. So, I mean, I think that it happens in the movies and TV shows and music and stuff first, and then we go adopting it, not even knowing what it is. It's like feeding somebody chitlins. It's good. You don't even know that this is like swine intestines that you're eating.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with being a strong, independent black woman. That's what I am. I don't have issue with it. That's how my mother and my father raised me. They raised me to be able to stand on my own, to have to be able to fend for myself. And as for relationships, I think it reflects a certain segment of relationships. Like I said, I have plenty of friends who have strong marriages, who have loving relationships, where not necessarily the man has to be the head and all decision makers, but they play to their strengths. You know, what works for us in this relationship?
Everybody claims that, but you look at the black scale on them. You look at the black community on a larger scale, even though everybody claims, well, not my friends, all my friends are good, and we're all good to go over here. When you look at the black community, that's not the story. You're talking about like 80% out of wedlock birth rate, and I just went to Maj, the Museum of Science and History, bought an exhibit down here about race, and they actually bought in stacks of money to show the difference of the average wealth, of the wealth gap between the average white family and average black family. And let me tell you something. That white family and the Asian family were 20 times higher. I took a picture of it so I could put it in the – it was 20 times higher.
Well, why aren't we getting married then? Why aren't we getting married?
Well, we're not going through our prerequisites. If you want to go to college and want to take calculus, trigonometry, you got to have a prerequisite. You got to show first either in high school or in a prior college math class that you can do algebra first and that you can do statistics first before they give you something bigger. We don't have prerequisites, so people are just jumping into it. Yeah, we hear women saying, you know, I put my child first. My child is my world. Well, the greatest gift you can give your child is a responsible man from the get-go to be her father. And if you didn't give them that gift, then, I mean, how are you putting them first? So you got to have those prerequisites before you even get into a family again, into that type of situation.
But I'm just saying, why aren't we getting married? There's no lack of reproduction. There's no lack of sexual activity, obviously.
Because black people don't know about generational wealth, so we're not.
No, but I'm just saying, why aren't we getting married? That's going
to jump. We're trying to jump to trigonometry, and we haven't done algebra yet.
Okay,
well,
so what's the best?
Let me jump in real quick. I understand generational wealth. I understand it very well. But you got to go back to slavery because we weren't allowed to have any type of economical, social, or political development. And even during the times where we were coming from the roots, you got to remember Black Wall Street when the white people destroyed everybody in Tulsa and took their wealth. So we're talking about a generational wealth of we've got to catch up another 400 years to get what we need to get. And then it's not even about wealth. It is about the love of our race. Forget money. Let's talk about love. Let's talk
well,
about
that's
the
whole thing about it. That's one of the problems. People
love and the respect.
Money
the love and respect. Like Taylor said this, that is very important. How can a black man that is raised by his mother turn his back against the whole African-American race because he didn't like who he or they were and disrespect the black queens that we have? Now, I'm currently married to a woman that's white and Mexican, so she's mixed. I have to step back and say, why am I not attracted to black women and why don't I give black women respect? And I'm not talking about just respect and saying hi, I love you. But I'm talking about empowering the black woman to the point where if you're looking for a good man, I'm going to find you a black man who loves you and respects you for who you are. So when we talk about a village, we're talking about a village from the inside out. And if we're talking about from a village from inside out, we've got to start with love and unity, regardless if we got attitudes, regardless if we've got a chip on our shoulder, regardless if we're poor, gay, whatever. It starts with the love within our community. What do you think about that?
Well, I'll have to argue that you can't throw money out because money is food, money is clothing, money is shelter. You know, the resources is what we need. You know, you never when a woman divorces a man, she doesn't take her, you know, take away his good character from him. She goes after the money. So I would have to argue that money is number one there as far as I don't know what your marital situation is or why you chose that type of mate. I see nothing wrong with interracial marriage. But the whole thing is when people use the whole excuse of, well, that's your mom's black, your grandma, whatever. Well, these black women walking around today, not my grandmama. They can't even hold a candle to my grandma. You want to talk about strong? My grandma had to be strong enough to know when it was time to step back and let my granddad deal with the boys because they had a lot of boys. And all of their boys today, business owners, or got a master's degree or above, and all the girls do too. But the grandma had to step back and let granddad do his thing in order to get that family strong. Because they can run it. That's the thing. We want to put all the resources and give all the credit to the women. And it's like, but you don't want to give no blame to the women. So you want them to have the steering wheel, but you don't want them to take blame when the car goes into the ditch. And that's just something I don't understand.
Is it about getting credit? I mean, because I really don't want to take credit for anything. I think because I believe in God, I think God is the supreme being. And like he told Nebuchadnezzar, I control whether you become rich or poor. I control whether you have wealth or you're going to be somebody. So is it really about taking credit for something? Because it's a lot deeper than just, I know you said we can't throw money out of it, but it's a lot deeper than just, you know, materialistic things, because we're not talking, the show's not about materialistic things. The show is about, do you love yourself? And if you can love yourself and give that same love and respect, why can't we bring up the black women, even though we may not be attracted to them, and let them know that, as Tara says, black women support and love us regardless of what we do. So why can't the black man do the same in return to the black woman? That's my question.
Well, first of all, the major complaint I hear coming from sisters is that they can't find a man on their level, and they're usually talking in the sense of education or finance. With that being said, that's where it seems like whenever you try to point men in their direction, look, these sisters just said they can't find a man on their level. They on NBC News, ABC News, DRE, whatever, saying that they can't find a man on their level financially, education-wise. But then when you try to point men in that direction and say that's what they need to do, they get diverted back to some other stuff, almost like, once again, fighting that male empowerment. Men have to love themselves and empower themselves before they could love and empower women. That's like who used this example. When the airplane is going down, you have to put your oxygen mask on first before you can apply an oxygen mask to somebody else. Or what's going to happen? Y'all all going to pass out and be gone. So he has to take care of himself first, love himself first, provide for himself first, build himself up first before he can even take a look at a black woman.
Any woman, right?
You stay trying to put the oxygen mask on the woman. Hey, I got you. Your oxygen mask ain't on. Y'all both dead.
I mean, it's a nice analogy, but I mean, I know a lot of parents would just probably shudder at the thought of saying, you know what, until I get myself together, my kids are going to suffer. I got to put my oxygen mask on first. I'll catch y'all later and when I'm breathing right. But I get the analogy.
So y'all agree to disagree, or are we still building this? What is it? Okay, people always talk about.
No, I agree. Black men need to get their acts together.
Okay,
they're always shifting the blame to us. They need to get their acts together.
Okay, well let's come up with some brainstorming ideas to put it out there for what we can do. Because most people say, well, we're talking, but we're not showing any action. So let's brainstorm the three of us. Or whomever want to call in, let's brainstorm some things that the brothers could do in order to get them to that level.
Well, you know, my first thing has always been, you know, it all starts with the family. So the first thing a black man can do is quit sticking his penis in women before he can handle the responsibility that comes from it. You know, stop having sex with women that you don't intend to marry or build a strong foundation with. Recreational sex is not working for us. That's what it starts with. And don't shift the blame and say, well, the woman controls it. Well, you control your impulses too. And since you want to be the head of the household and the leader, let your leadership start with your own penis first.
What made you marry a woman that was half Mexican and half white over an African American woman?
What was your question?
What made you marry a biracial woman that was half, I think you said Hispanic and half white, over marrying just a straight out sister?
Well, at the beginning of the show, I explained it, but I'll explain it again. I was completely desensitized when I was a kid. I mean, within my own family, I was told that I was going to be completely ugly and I'd never find a woman because I was too dark, I was too ugly, and all that stuff. And so in order for me to make my family feel like, you know, I was worthy, you know, I had to marry a woman, a white woman, you know, or a light-skinned sister, because in Louisiana, the Creole, you know, in our culture in Louisiana, it's all about light skin and colored eyes. I mean, that's just the way I grew up. And so being Creole, you know, if you if you got light skin and blue eyes and you know, sandy hair, then you gonna be somebody, or you are somebody. So for me, it was me trying to fulfill that manifest destiny, not manifest destiny, but that self-fulfilling prophecy that I need to marry a light-skinned woman or a white woman in order for my kids to be beautiful. So that was my desensitization from that point of view, but also seeing only white women on TV who I deem to be attractive and sexy. And that's where I end up today.
Well, I mean, for me, in my case, I'm not married, I'm single, but the woman that I was most attracted to and crazy about, the most crazy about, was a very dark woman. I mean, Sudanese dark, and I love that about her, so it has nothing to do with skin or hair or anything like that. The problem is that culture-wise, if you're an upwardly mobile black man, with hair, anyway. If you don't want to compete with him and try to bang heads with him rather than work with him. And that's why I always say that other than no other independent.
Can you speak into your mic again? You're breaking up.
Well, I'm saying that's why women of other races become more pivotal to a more upwardly mobile black men, because they're more into teamwork. Their father's been around. They've seen male authority. They don't fear male empowerment, because most black men, they're not gonna be a good fit for black women. They just don't argue and bang heads all every day over who's the head, over who's this, over who's that. You know, and that starts with the whole.
Terry, you can probably correct me if I'm wrong. I really don't think it's about upper mobility. Maybe it is, but I think black women would just be happy with a man who respects them, loves them, and have a job. I mean, am I right, Terry, or am I?
That's, you know what? There are a segment of women who don't want to be alone so much that just to meet those bare requirements would be good enough. I'm not one of those women. It's not enough. I mean, because no offense, a 17-year-old boy can just have a job and, you know, and not no criminal record and not a bunch of kids. I mean, I want a man with a vision, because I have a vision. I think that you should pursue someone, and, you know, for lack of a better term, who is on your level. When I mean on your level, I don't necessarily mean, oh, he makes as much money as me, or he owns these things, not material things. I'm talking about mentality, someone who thinks like you, you know, someone who has like goals and inspiration. You know, I know there are certain people that, you know, hey, he might be a nice guy. He's not nice for me. We're not a good fit. We're not compatible. We have different visions for our lives. It won't work.
So, yeah, we just disagreed for the first time.
Huh?
I think we disagreed for the first time.
I love it. I love the unity. It's bringing it together. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling the love. So, as we take this to a deeper level, do you, sir, in Florida, do you feel that religion or being believing in God is important for a man to be contributing to one's attraction to a woman?
Nah, I never really connected the two. I mean, maybe I'm just looking at it the wrong way, but I've always looked at it as totally different things. Your relationship with the Most High, as I like to say, is your relationship with the Most High, and your relationship with the woman. It can help you be a better man to the woman, but it can't help you as far as attraction goes. I think you just like what you like. I think it's a physical.
Now, I will say this. As a woman who, I'm a Christian, okay? Each faith is different, but I will say this, and I'm not an exceptionally traditional person, but I do believe in the word as it is written. And the word says a man should love his wife the way Christ loves the church. This is what I believe.
Oh.
And to me, any man that can love me as selflessly and as fully as Christ loves me personally, he's an attractive man to me. That's a man I know who will put my well-being before his very own. That's a man who I know he will make the appropriate sacrifices for me and the family, not out of his own self-interest, but out of the interest of what is good for our family. That's an attractive attribute to me. Character speaks more deeply than the way any one person looks at me. If he has a true, honest, non-hypocritical relationship with the Lord, understands the Word, studies the Word, and abides by the Word, I'm telling you what, I can give up the reins any day of the week because that means I'm going to be able to trust his judgment. And I'm going to be able to trust where his source comes from for his knowledge and his wisdom. And I also have faith that, because I believe that, you know, the Lord also used women in his ministry, that he'll be able to trust and use me in the same way and say, I may be the head of the household, but I can look to you, my wife, my helpmate, and trust your judgment because I have chosen well. And I can ask you a question and say, well, you know what? She's an expert on A. I'm going to trust her judgment on this. And part of being a good leader is being able to trust those you surround yourself with. So, yeah, that's attractive to me.
Do you have a picture of that money differential thing? Do you have a picture of that?
I actually took it at the museum they had to set up.
Could you post that? I don't know if you're in the chat room or not, but our friend of mine, but can you find a way to get me a picture of that or something, or can I Google it or what?
If you have an open email, I can email it to you. That's not a problem. I can email it to you now if you want me to. I don't mind.
You can email it to me at soundoff97413@gmail.com. Because I think
off.
That's very interesting because of that. So,
you said sound off what now?
Soundoff97413.
Soundoff97413?
Soundoff97413@gmail.com.
Okay, I email it to you right now.
Okay. So, Tara, do you think that that black men should support women who want to step out of their race?
They want us to support, you know, wherever you – my thing is always – You there?
Yep, I hear you.
Okay, my point has always been, what is the motivation for doing it? So if a black woman wants to date outside of her race for the right motivation, yeah, support her. If the black man wants us to date out of his race for whatever reason, I'm supportive of it. It's when it's based on some foolishness that I, you know, like I said, it makes me wonder, what is the sickness that has made you make these decisions? Not necessarily what is this, there has to be a sickness today interracially, but the sickness that has motivated you to say this is the only thing that is good. So, if you know, hey, sisters don't need dirty looks going down the street. You know, I've dated interracially, George, and, you know, I used to get my fair share of looks from brothers who were like, well, what's she doing? Doing me, that's what I'm doing.
So, do you... Mr. Florida, do you think that black men should support women, black women who wants to step out of their comfort zone and date outside of their race?
Yeah, I do. I wouldn't be really wrong. Because right now, most African American women seem to have this romanticized notion of white men or men of other races. Oh, you know, they're perfect. They don't cheat. They do this. They do that. They'll love it. They'll cherish it. That is that. I wanted to go over there and actually see what it is. Because what they don't know, I was just watching Cops the other day. begging his dude to let him pay for it. He put his lady out, had her escorted out by the cops. He ain't going to take her to court. No white dudes don't play. That's another thing about it. When they go over there with any other lady, Asian men not going to play with them like we do. The Arab men not going to play with them like we do. The white men ain't going to play with them like we do. And the same amount of Spanish men and the Spanish men will put their shit up their ass. They're not going to play with them like we do. So they need to go over there and not to get a thing. That's why the other women, the other races are coming to us. Because they're like, well, shit, y'all, if anything, y'all the most laid back. So they need to go over there and get a touch of reality.
Do you think that African women from Africa are attracted to African American men?
Probably physically, but not culturally, because they tell a lot of people coming from Africa don't even deal with them when they get over there. Unfortunately, that's why Nigerian women are African. They're like the number one college students, so they just stick to their home.
Yeah, most of the African women that I know are fiercely loyal to dating African men from their culture, and I mean specifically from their country. You won't find too many women from Ghana marrying Nigerians and things like that. They marry nationally and within their sex. But you will find a lot of African men who will, I'm going to call it dating for lack of a better word, women who are not from their country, but they'll never marry them. They definitely won't have a family with them. They won't marry them. Oh, no. That's a renegade that marries a woman who's not from, who hasn't been approved by the family.
Okay, now I'm about to take y'all on a trip. I know some of y'all don't want to be on. But do you, both of you, do you believe that there are Africans or African Americans who are Jewish?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. The reason why I ask this question is because would that make a difference to you if they were Jewish?
Well, from your standpoint, you mean religious wise, you talking race? Because the whole thing with that is you have to, that would take deep into it, but Jews is an illegitimate race anyway. And I know it's probably going to piss some religious folks off because they've been told that these are God's chosen people and just that God has a favorite people and Israel is, first of all, Israel comes to ISIS God and hell.
Listen, you need to speak into your phone. We're losing you.
You
got to speak into your phone.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay, what else? I said, first of all, Israel is three words, not one. And it means ISIS, Ra, and El. Okay? And they got that from Africa. The only thing Jews are that you see today, they're actually called the Ashkenazi, who migrated from Europe and wrote themselves into history. Okay? The whole reason they tell you that, and I'm not even getting into it too deep, the whole reason they tell you that the earth is only about 5,000-6,000 years old, 4,000 years before Christ, 2,000 and something now, they don't want you to know that this earth is way older. Because anytime you go back further than that, black people ran the earth. Okay? You're talking about an illegitimate group who wrote themselves into history. So I don't even believe that they truly are, because the letter J didn't even exist until the 1600s. So where are Jews coming from?
Good question. And I know it kind of took it on a different path because it's one of those questions, but because black people are in this non-spiritual walk, some of them don't understand some things. And so the reason why I'm asking you these spiritual questions is because it's important to know for some of the listeners to get different dialogues on things they've never heard of before. So because you explained that so eloquently, some people would say, well, I don't believe you. So
Right, but they have to, for me, when a person said that I don't believe you or I disagree, I wouldn't get upset, but I would have to ask them, when did you go do the research to prove me wrong and show it to me? You understand? Because you have to, in order for you to disagree with me, you have to even go verify what I said first and then say, I verified it, what you're saying is actually wrong, it's actually this, not that. Because before the Council of Nicaea, keep in mind, Christianity came into play 300 years after the death of Jesus. Prior to the Council of Nicaea, people assumed that Jesus was black and was born in the caves in Ethiopia somewhere. Romans came along, and Paul and Constantine and them came along and changed the story to fit them. Jesus didn't come to save a wretch like you. Jesus came to give you back your power that was yours anyway. He came to fulfill the law of Moses, but Moses really couldn't tell you because Moses had a speech impediment, so his brother Aaron had to speak for him. Moses been trying to tell you who God was. We ain't listen. All Jesus came to do was fulfill that. And then they ended up crucifying him and stealing his word. So that's the whole thing. When you read that Bible, you have to learn how to read it from a scholarly perspective. You can't just listen to what preachers tell you. Because prior to the Council of Nicaea, like I said, people assumed Jesus was a black man in Ethiopia somewhere, not no Jewish man in Bethlehem.
Miss Sarah? I want you to ask him a question that you have always wanted to, well, I know you're very vocal, so I want you to ask a question that may prompt another question for our listeners to understand where this conversation is coming from. So when you ask him the question, the question has to be something that he can answer and then rebuttal back to you.
So do you want me to ask him a genuine question? Because I don't have a genuine question for him.
No.
But if you want me to ask him something to spark a debate, that's a whole other story.
I'm talking about on the topic of, do you love yourself?
Okay. Well, let me think. I guess that's really, he hasn't really even answered that question. Do you love yourself? And how are you defining love of yourself? How are you showing it in your life?
Hello?
Love starts with a microphone to your mouth.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I was saying, well, what am a preacher sign? So a pastor sign, actually. So coming up, all I got was Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. I was never actually taught how to love myself until I reached a certain age. And I actually did not learn to love myself until I went back and found out who I was. Because it's almost impossible to love yourself if you don't know who you are. If you think that you just the N-word and you was a slave and you was finally freed by the grace of Abraham Lincoln and all this foolishness and the civil rights, if that's all you know, I don't see how black people can love themselves because they don't know who they are.
I
had to go back and learn. You said, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
I am the descendant of the people who brought all of this stuff that you see before you here. So even the things that I'm looking at, I know that I got big shoes to fill. I know that I got to take care of myself. I work out. You know, I got the treadmill in the crib. I eat right. I don't mess with the swine. Mentally, I'm there. I study. I'm working on my second college degree now. I only got one more class left. You know, the bills are paid, and I get out there in the community, and actually, I'm a Shriner, so I get out there in the community and actually do stuff, do community service, do work, put food drives, feed the hungry, clothe the people. I walk it, I don't just talk it, but line of men who was known for doing the same way. So once you understand that, how you can't back down because, like, you got these big shoes to fill. You standing on top of the shoulders of some giants, so you ain't got no choice but to get out there and go hard and love yourself.
Or you can engage in self-loathing because you didn't live up to the expectations of those before you. I don't know.
Now, do you actually love yourself, or are you projecting a reality who you want them to think you are?
No, I love myself. I can love myself.
I want you to explain how you love yourself, because because people don't understand what one of our questions was is, how do you define love, and how do you show love? So, like I said, I'm not going to go over it, but how do you define love, and how do you show love?
Well, I mean, if you love yourself, you wouldn't allow somebody else to hurt you, because love is not hurt, you know. Love is not selfish. Love is understanding. When you love yourself, I basically equate loving yourself with the way that you treat yourself and the way that you respect others. You know, that's the whole thing about it. When you talk about a kingdom of heaven, they actually talk about the kingdom of heaven on earth. And what people don't understand is that golden commandment that Jesus added on top of the Ten Commandments, guess what? It wasn't just BS. He was trying to tell you that if you love your neighbor like you love yourself, all this foolishness would have been over. But then you have people who turn around and try to rewrite that and go, well, yeah, you love yourself like you love your neighbor if you're this or if you're in that group. We're only talking about this group. We're not talking about those people over there. You understand? So that's why you don't see that kingdom of heaven, because if everybody just followed that, love your neighbor like you love yourself, you'll be good to go. So, yeah, I love myself. I love myself by showing myself respect, by taking care of myself and by respecting others, treating others the way I want to be treated.
Okay, I want you to ask Miss Tara a question where she can answer herself about the way she loves herself and how she shows love.
Well, first of all, I don't know if this is too personal to ask, but do you have children?
Nope.
No. So that question wouldn't even be a good one.
I give the best parental advice. People who have no kids, they give the best parental advice.
But I get the whole thing is, do you love yourself enough to say, if you ever do get married and have kids, to say, look, this child that we're having or bringing into this world and that we're married, this is our kid. But we have to also understand that this kid is going to be a gift to the community. So we're going to be together as a family and give this kid, because that's the thing, when you send messed up kids out there, they tearing up, you don't send a bad citizen out there in the world to mess up the community. So what I'm saying is, do you love yourself? Or a decision in general, enough.
I don't even want kids. You don't even know. I'm not having a kid.
Okay,
at all.
So I guess the question I would ask other sisters then in general, do they love themselves enough to put aside the strong and I would like to see them put aside the strong independent black woman.
Okay. Let me ask both of you this. What do we do as black men, older black men, what do we do to teach our children to respect our elders? What do we need to do to bring that gap between children today, elders? What do we need to do?
I don't think they will.
No. I don't think they will do. What can we do in order to help them and guide them? You said you were a Shriner, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, so what are y'all doing to help those young people to give respect to the elders who have come before us? Because you know the generational gap between the 60s and the 90s, there's a huge gap in how they respect themselves and how they fight the fight against racial inequality or inequality as it is. So what are we doing?
I have a partial solution. First thing, these parents and these role models and figureheads need to quit trying to be friends with these children. You're not a friend. You're not their peer. You're supposed to be a role model, an adult. You're supposed to guide them, nurture them, show them the way. And first things you have to do is people learn through modeling. So if I don't have respect for my mother, there is no way my niece, who I'm modeling this in front of, will show that same respect to me when I'm older or to my mother. So we have to model what we want these kids to do first. I see grown people, they curse in front of their parents, they curse out their parents, they don't honor their mother and their father, they don't respect them. And I'm saying this regardless of how you were raised, there is a certain amount of honor that is owed them, right? So if you want kids to start to, you know, treat people who are older with due deference and respect, you have to model that for them. And part of that is, you know, we're not friends. We're not in a peer relationship. I'm not in a peer relationship with my niece.
Here's the thing about
that. She doesn't need to try and come to me like I'm one of her girlfriends and sit down and have a cup of coffee with me.
Back to here's the thing about that. What I was saying, we can't, because, and I know you're not going to hear this, but I'm just going to give you the truth, because that's what we need right now. We need truth. When you look at the Asian kids respecting the Asian elders, you have to understand that the Asian elders came over here and they faced discrimination. They had language barriers and stuff, but they built businesses so that their Asian kids don't have to go to white people for jobs. They can go to white people for jobs if they want to, but they don't have to. You'll never see an Asian person in prison, but if they've done so, you won't see too many Asian people in prison better yet, because they got businesses. You know, same thing with Jews, same thing with any other culture. Those elders that came here pretty much set up the systems and networks so that they have a reason to look up to them, because they actually paved the way. With all of our children, 99% of them going to white people for everything, why are they going to pay tribute to the elders that came for them when the elders that came for them didn't pay? They integrated and lost all of their stuff. We had two baseball leagues. We got rid of both baseball leagues, Jackie Robinson, and then get some Negroes in baseball to this white man league. Yeah, basketball already. We had, like you mentioned, the Black Wall Street. You still had Durham, North Carolina. You had Tulsa, Oklahoma. You had Roseville. The people that came for us integrated and gave all our stuff up. So what are the kids honestly respecting about them? Not saying
right.
They should disrespect. Not saying they should disrespect, no.
Cut you guys off, but we are closing down right now. We have 36 seconds of the show. I appreciate you guys calling in. I love y'all from the bottom of my heart. It's people like you guys who make the show great. But I got to end it because it's going to be over in about 20 seconds. So I'd like to thank everybody for listening in, tuning in. If you haven't heard anything, if you haven't heard the archives before, the next time I hear you, you should be sounding off.